When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
I'm Ashley.
And I'm Brooke.
And you're here with us on A Teacher's Who Talk Crime
Podcast.
Now, I know y'all are probably wondering, why are y'all wearing the same things as last episode? Well, we're double recording tonight.
We are.
Yeah. So this is our second recording of the night. It's currently 11:09 my time, 10:09 Brooke's time. But, you know, we had to get her done.
We did.
So here we are.
But you only know we're wearing the same clothes if you're now watching us on YouTube.
Yes. And if not, we've outed ourselves.
Yeah. So we really do hope that you guys go and watch us on YouTube. You can just search Teachers Talk Crime on YouTube. Go and like and subscribe and maybe like leave us a comment, a review.
Follow us, share us, do all that stuff.
All the things.
We would love that.
Yes, we would. We really would.
So being as though this is our like second recording of the night, we don't really have much to say.
No, we don't.
We don't. So we're just going to jump into our Estudiante
Estrella. Okay.
You know? Our Estudiante Estrella. And before we jump into that, again, we said it last episode, we're going to say it again. Please, please, please send us your reviews. You can do it on Apple Podcasts. If you're listening on Spotify, they have a poll after every episode that writes, that you can write what you think of the episode. Just write review before it, because I always look at them. If you want to email us one, just make sure you put podcast review in the subject line and send it to teacherstalkcrimepodcast@gmail.com. Again, this one I'm about to read is from a year ago.
Oh, that's fine.
I mean, we love it. We love but we would like some more because, you know, all y'all talking about how y'all like it. And, you know, just tell us.
Yeah. We love words of affirmation over here.
100%, that really is mine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mine too.
And acts of service. Mm-mm. Speaking of love languages, did you know an apology language was a thing too? There's a quiz for that. Yeah.
I'm going to have to take that.
Yeah. It was really interesting. I can't remember what mine was off the top of my head, but it's like accepting responsibility, I think, was my top apology language. Like, I liked for you to accept. I think it's accept. Something like that. Huh. Or just acknowledging that you were wrong and like trying to find a way to fix it, if you will.
Interesting.
Right? That's what I thought too. So I was like, okay, cool. I mean, that is right. Like, how you gonna fix this?
Yeah.
Tell me. So that's my apology, Angela. But anyway, our estudiante estrella for today is MX Sandy 12.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I said too. Okay. And MX Sandy 12's review is titled Amazing Pod. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
For your review. And this one's short and sweet. It says, educational and so well done. Thanks, MX Sandy 12.
We love it. Short and to the point.
You know, just bam, right in there. So MX Sandy 12, thank you so much for your review. This gold star's for you. Bing.
Yeah. I like it.
Picasso.
Well, if you don't enjoy our banter, then this is the episode for you because we just got straight into it.
Sure did.
So you're welcome. If you do enjoy our banter, I am sure we have enough episodes out there full of it.
Tons of it.
But one more time. I do want to give a shout out to one of our listeners, Christy, if she is listening, Christy with a C and a Y. Christy makes earrings, homemade jewelry that she started in 2020 during quarantine. And she sent me some earrings to kind of showcase her business. And if you would like to do that for, if you would like to do the same for your business, let me or Ashley know how we can help you and promote it here on the podcast. But Christy's Etsy shop is Christy Loves Crafts. So you can search that on Etsy. Christy's Instagram for her shop is Christy Loves Crafts. And she gave me a 10% discount code. So you can use code Brooke10 at checkout. And all the earrings are teacher friendly, teacher appropriate, all the cute stuff.
Love that.
Yeah.
Love that. I need to get some Christmas earrings.
Yes, I have some in my cart.
Sheen.
I'm trying to get my Christmas stuff ready.
Yeah. I have a couple sweatshirts. But I need more because I feel like the whole, granted, y'all already know. I mean, if you don't, Christmas ain't my jam. It's not my favorite holiday. Yeah, you and Whitney both. I love Christmas. I could do without Christmas. It's a money pit for me with twins.
See, who, I can live without Thanksgiving.
Oh, nah. Thanksgiving is my numero uno. No,
nope, don't care about it.
Turkey, the stuffing.
It doesn't do anything for me.
It's like my only time that I get to like spend with like my entire family.
Right.
You know, like all of them. So I really just cherish Thanksgiving and the food because I'll be starving myself for a couple of days so I can just chow down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we all turned very gluttonous on that day. Oh. So. Yeah, we all do. Oh. I think everybody does.
You know, this is going to sound really dumb. I don't think I know what the word gluttonous means.
It's one of the deadly sins.
Yeah, I don't read.
So it's like where you like, you put food above everything else.
Oh,
so
1,000%. Like, gluttonous. Yes. Yep. Hungry.
And like you overindulge in eating. Oh. And eating is like.
Couple plates. I get the plate, the pre-plate, the rib plate, the post-plate, the after-dinner plate.
The midnight plate.
All the plates and a to-go plate. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Don't play with me on Thanksgiving.
Yep. So like play. I said, everybody turns very gluttonous.
Okay. Well, nobody come for me because I didn't know what gluttonous means, okay?
That's fine.
Don't come for me. Don't leave me a comment. Don't leave me a thing. Don't leave a nasty review saying, she a reading teacher, she don't know what gluttonous means. Look, my kids are in.
That's not one of our vocabulary words.
It's not. Mm-hmm. They're not learning gluttonous in third grade.
Nope.
Anyway.
Anyway, we're going to jump right into it. This is a listener suggestion case. So if you are the listener that suggested this case, the Holly Cassino case, this one is for you.
Okay.
So sit down, shut up. The murder is about to begin.
Ahora.
Holly Cassino was a single mother of an 18-month-old daughter, Alexis. Holly was a daughter to Tony Cassino and her father, and a friend to so many. Holly was a hard worker, and at the time of her death, she was working at Myers, which we don't have a Myers in the South, so if you don't know what Myers is, it is a grocery store in the nearby town of Champaign, and it's kind of like their version of Walmart.
Mm. Okay.
So, I've never heard of a Myers, but
neither.
It's like a Walmart.
Okay.
So every late night shift, her mother would bring her daughter to the store before bedtime so that Holly could tell her daughter goodnight. I know. So sweet.
That is so precious.
Mm-hmm.
That is so
her precious. Coworkers and mother are saddened to know that when she got off work around 10:30 p.m. on November 1st, 2009, it was the last time they would see their friend, daughter, and coworker alive. Holly sent her mom a text at 11:20 p.m. when she got home that night about meeting her the next morning because Holly's daughter was staying the night at her grandmother's house. And Holly also texted another friend around the same time saying, hey, I'm home. I'm about to pop in a movie and chill. This was a this was very common for Holly to do, to check in with her mom and to text close friends. But little did anyone know, Holly would never show up the next morning at her mother's house. And those that knew Holly said that this was really not the case. Like, this was very out of character. And her 100%. Mom even said, this is super out of character. I had her daughter. She would clearly come and see her daughter. Like, she wouldn't just sleep in. Like, it was very unusual.
Yeah, and the fact that she, you know, her mom brought her to her job to say goodnight every night shows that she's a very involved parent. She wouldn't just not show up. Yeah.
Yes. And those that knew Holly said that she was very loved in the community and she never had any issues with anyone that they knew of. She was currently living in a mobile home park at the time of her death and was always out walking her daughter around the park. The park had about 2,000 residents in it, and Holly really had dreams of becoming a teacher. However, when she became pregnant with her daughter at a very younger age, not young like in her teens, but at a younger age, being a teacher got put on the back burner for the time being. Holly was very passionate about life. She loved life. She loved her friends. She was very well liked by her classmates in high school. Holly was just an overall shining light, people described her as. Tawny Cassano, on the morning of November 2nd, 2009, sat in disbelief on the steps of her daughter Holly's residence. She had just made a horrifying discovery no mother should ever have to make. Her only daughter had been fatally stabbed in her home. Holly, 22 years old at the time, was expected to be at Tony's home just two streets away by 9 a.m. that morning. But when she had not arrived, which was very unusual, as we mentioned, and unable to reach her by phone, Tony decided to drive to her daughter's house to check on her. When she arrived, she noticed the front door was ajar, which gave her chills. She entered the house and Tony was confronted with a horrific sight, saying, quote, red splotches all over the floor. Tony said the following about what she saw. Quote, I thought it was fake blood from a Halloween party and that she just hadn't cleaned up yet. Adding, quote, I walked through the house and went into her bedroom, still calling to her. I found her lying on the floor on her back, face up. I saw her naked body with blood all over her and stab wounds. She had some clothing on, but it had been moved around. I sat down beside her and put my hand on her leg. She then said she cried out in a prayer and called 911. Tony said she only stayed in Holly's home for a few minutes, but left the home and waited outside, as I mentioned earlier. She wanted to be sure that she did not contaminate anything at the scene so that they had the best chance of finding Holly's killer.
Good for her. Good for her.
It is really good for her. I think because instinct would have been like to like shake Holly or try to wake her up. Like, you're her mother. Yeah. So like, you're going to want to protect your daughter.
Yeah. And we just went into the JonBenet case where we talked about how that whole entire crime scene was tarnished. You know, John scooping her up, bringing her upstairs. But as a mom, she knew, like, look, I need to figure out who did this. So as much as I want to stay here and in here with you and hold you and do all these things, I'm doing what's best to bring you, get justice for you.
I agree. Now, it was a first thought, obviously, is Holly's baby daddy. Dang. And I, you know, don't know another way of putting that because that's what he is. He is Holly's father of the child, right? Yeah. So Holly's baby daddy was in the picture, but the pair were not together. Tony Cassano, Holly's mother, was not a fan of the baby's father. She claimed that Holly would have bruises on her that she would be unable to explain. Holly even tried to file a restraining order on her baby's father, but there was not enough evidence to support this. So with this information, police singled him out first and foremost. And as they do, like, they start with the inner circle and then they work their way out of the circle, right? However, Holly's baby's father was very cooperative. He took a polygraph. He gave DNA. He did an interview. He was interrogated and he had an alibi for his whereabouts. He was eliminated from the suspect list. Now, the town in which this happened was called Mahomet. Mahomet, let me hold on one second. It was Mahomet, Illinois.
Okay.
And Mahomet, Illinois only, oh, so it only had about 9,434 people in the town.
Oh.
So very small town, mm-hmm. right? And the police is like, oh, wow, this is a really tragic case. Like somebody's murdered, blah, blah, blah. But with that few people living in the community, they were like, we might actually have a chance of catching this person yeah. because it's such a low amount of people. Mm-hmm, somebody's mm-hmm. going to say something.
Yeah.
So with this hope in mind, Tony did right by not contaminating the evidence, but she could not have known that this case would take 9 years to solve. And that some of the blood Tony saw in the residence of Holly's house, she believed the blood was fake. She later learned it was mostly Holly's. But what she didn't know is that the killer had left blood at the crime scene.
Mm.
And that blood and semen would later identify Michael Henslick. Now, veteran Champaign County Sheriff's Deputy Douglas Bayaleski. We're going to go with Bayaleski. I butchered that, but that's your name today, sir. I'm really sorry.
You did great.
We're going to call you Douglas. So, Sheriff's Deputy Douglas was the initial law enforcement officer to respond to the 911 call from a distressed woman, Tony, at Holly's residence mm-hmm. in Candlewood Estates Mobile Home Park on DuPage Street in Mahomet, Illinois.
Okay.
The caller reported that her daughter was deceased and covered in blood. Upon his arrival, he encountered Tony, who was described as upset and hysterical, as one would.
Absolutely.
She gestured for him to follow her to the rear of the mobile home. Noticing blood droplets just inside the door, the deputy, reflecting on the situation, stated, quote, "This led me to believe there was more of a situation here than I originally expected." This 25-year veteran deputy proceeded cautiously through the residence, making sure not to disturb the various areas where he observed traces of blood, until he reached Holly's bedroom. He refrained from entering the room until he could call in what he had just found. So a regular officer responded to the scene, noticed how much blood was in the home.
Yeah.
He noticed that there were knives in the kitchen. He noticed there was blood in the bathroom. He noticed that there was blood in the hall. He noticed that Holly had blood all over her. He also noticed that Holly's garments were pulled, like her shirt was pulled up to her chin
mm-hmm.
and her underwear was pulled down, mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. indicating a sexual assault.
Yes.
He also realized, like, this was more than he could take on. So he called in the crime scene investigators, the detectives, and he waited for them to arrive before he contaminated evidence.
Yes.
Which we now know this case took 9 years, but they were very meticulous about making sure they collected evidence and kept it all preserved.
Yes.
Which we like.
Because then, you know, now the police, I mean, granted, DNA back then, 2009, you said?
Yeah.
2009, you know, DNA was, you know, on the up,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Right.
But, you know, things are coming out every year to, you know, really enhance it. So the better you can preserve it, the better chances you have in the future correct. Of figuring out what's going on mm-hmm. and who did it. Yeah.
Well, and a lot of people from the town of Mahomet, they were, like, criticizing the police as the years, like, passed. But, like, Tony, who's the one that actually lost a daughter, mm-hmm. was like, y'all, they actually are doing everything right.
Yeah.
Like, they kept Tony informed. They kept her up to date.
Mm-hmm.
They made sure the evidence was collected correctly. They made sure nothing was contaminated. They put the DNA into CODIS. And we're going to get into all this, but, like, they did do everything right. And
yeah.
sometimes you can do everything right and still not get that big break.
Yeah. If the DNA don't match, the DNA don't match.
It just don't.
You know?
It really don't. So let's get into Michael Henslick. Michael Henslick was 21 years old at the time of the murder, and he knew Holly as his classmate from high school in Mahomet, Illinois. He was also Holly's former neighbor, and actually, I think he was still her current neighbor. Like, he lived with his parents, who lived in the trailer park or the mobile home park that Holly also lived in.
Next door.
Not next door, but in the trailer park.
Okay. Hmm.
So, like, he lived in that mobile home park that Holly also lived in.
Yes.
Not next door, but like he lived
there. In the vicinity.
Right. And keep in mind, Holly took her daughter out on walks a lot of the time around this mobile park.
Yes.
Yeah. So Holly's cousin, Amber, said at trial that she liked Henslick. So Amber is Holly's like first cousin, and Amber and Henslick were actually friends in high school and kind of like had this on again, off again flirtatious vibe.
Okay.
Yeah. Henslick and Holly had many mutual friends, including Holly's cousin, Amber, but the relationship never went beyond that. So like Holly and Henslick were never friends. They just had mutual friends.
Yes. I get it. Yeah.
So it's like they knew each other,
but they didn't.
But they didn't hang out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Amber would talk about this guy, Henslick, cool. Holly's like, great. Sounds cool. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But like she never G-hauled with Henslick. Like, right.
Cross paths.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No. But Holly was never ugly to him.
Yeah.
And, you know, but like if you just don't hang out, you just don't hang out.
Yeah.
So Amber said that her and Henslick often spent time together when she would come home from college for visits and even exchanged some text messages off and on. Like they had this off again, off on again flirtatious thing. They never dated. They never made it official, but they did have this like relationship,
yeah.
Right? The cousin said that when she had found out that Holly had been murdered, her boyfriend at the time was taking her home to be with family when she received a text from Henslick. She said the following about the incident, quote, he apologized and said he was sorry and he had heard about what happened to Holly and that there was a lot of commotion on our street. She added, quote, he said she had been beaten or shot. I told him that she had been stabbed to death and that I didn't have any extra information. The cousin did not share this information with police at the time as she did not consider Henslick to be involved,
yeah,
or the text to even be relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm sure a lot of people texted Amber, you know, or texted family members and were like, I'm so sorry, I heard, what can we do? Like, yeah, how can we help? You know, because that's the right thing to do.
Yeah. And it wasn't like out of the ordinary, like he said something that was really alarming to her. Like, mm-hmm, like, how would you know that? Like, the police didn't even reveal that. You know what I mean? He was like, well, I think she got like beat up or shot or something.
Right.
You know what I mean? But
and it wasn't even weird that he texted her. It wasn't like this random person from high school that you've never spoken to texted you.
Mm-hmm.
Like these two had a texting relationship. So this text didn't alarm Amber in any way.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, she didn't think the text to be relevant, but in 2018, when Henslick was finally arrested, she immediately informed the police of this interaction on the day she found out Holly died.
Yeah.
Henslick had gone to Holly's home to visit her late on the night of November 1st, 2009. Holly was always really kind to Henslick and talked to him as she would anyone. And Henslick claimed, now let's just be clear, Henslick ended up confessing. We're going to get into that. But Henslick ended up confessing. He said he went over to Holly's house to talk about Amber. Which, again, don't really make no sense because, like, Amber got a whole boyfriend and, like, y'all never actually dated. Y'all weren't going to date. Y'all never had dated. You just texted. So, like, why do you need to talk to her about Amber?
But also, why are you going to her house? Y'all don't hang out like that.
Y'all don't. Y'all never have.
So the first interaction y'all are actually happening, you're going to her house. That just seems a little sus to me. That seems a little weird.
It's weird.
Yeah.
Very weird. So in Henslick's confession, he claimed that he went over there to talk to her about Amber. And when he was over there, he claimed that the two of them had consensual sex that evening. Yes. He then claimed that he fell asleep on her floor. And she fell asleep in her bed. And around 1 a.m. to 2 a.m., he woke up in the middle of the night, went into the kitchen, got a knife, and stabbed her in a fit of rage. He gave no other motive other than saying, quote, maybe it was rage, maybe it was jealousy, maybe it was fear. And that's all he had to say about the stabbing of Holly.
But of what?
Exactly.
Fear of what? Jealousy of what? Fit of rage for what?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't make any sense.
None. Also, why are you sleeping on her floor? If you two had consensual sex, why are y'all not like sleeping in the same bed?
Not gonna have a little cuddle?
Live in the but you also live in the mobile park.
Walk home.
Go home.
Immediately.
So it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't.
None.
Absolutely none. Mm-mm.
That's all he said.
That's the dumbest story I've ever heard. Mm-hmm. The dumbest exclamation.
That was his confession. Yeah.
So they found him because he confessed.
We're going to get into how they found him.
Okay,
but he did end up confessing once they found him.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Henslick said in this confession that he had wandered through the home after stabbing Holly, looking for something to wrap his arm with when he had gotten cut because Holly fought back. And so he actually got cut in the stabbing of Holly. And he ended up wrapping his cut with a pair of stockings. And they actually ended up finding the cardboard that the stockings like come in, in the sink. And so he like wrapped himself with the stockings. And then he said he then left the home and threw the knife in a nearby field. But when they went to said field, granted, this was 9 years later, I get it. There was no knife to be found.
Okay.
Which to me is bad juju because where'd that knife go?
Like who picked it up? And then you probably saw it with some blood on it. So what?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like that.
Mm-mm.
So like I said, this case did take 9 years. And once Henslick was arrested and charged, he did end up confessing. Now, Henslick was finally arrested on August 28th of 2018 and charged with the murder and aggravated assault of Holly Cassino. This all came about when in 2018, investigators sent the unknown DNA found at the scene to a company called Parabon, which we've mentioned this company before, and this is the ones that do the DNA / genealogy testing.
Mm.
Okay? So they don't necessarily say swab, swab, put it in a machine. Oh, this is Ashley Brandt. They do swab, swab, put it in a machine, and they say who this DNA could possibly belong to based off of a family tree.
Mm.
That's how this DNA testing works. Mm-hmm.
That's kind of cool.
The company was then able to use its public DNA database and ancestry information to create a family tree of the suspect, Michael Henslick. The company is able to go back as far as the 1800s on someone's family tree. I know.
How?
Right? I don't even know. I really don't know. Like, they didn't have records back then. What are you looking
at? Like, how do you know that's my people?
You looking on the rock for the transcript where they carved it? I don't even know.
Like, that's crazy to me.
I realize that's the wrong time period, people. I understand that. I understand in the 1800s they had writing things. I get it. Y'all knew it, but y'all knew what I meant.
We did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So using all this information, they were able to identify Michael Henslick as a great possibility that this could be their suspect.
Wow.
So this case is crazy because they then needed DNA from Michael Henslick to say, well, is it actually him?
Mm-hmm.
So what they did was they actually followed Michael Henslick around. Like they were trying to find like a water bottle. Mm-hmm. They were trying to find a Coke can, whatever they could do to collect his DNA.
Yes.
And they were really like, wait, we shouldn't be having to do this. Because what they learned was Michael Henslick was arrested in 2009, the same year Holly was killed, on felony drug charges. He was actually out on parole when he murdered Holly. Mm-hmm.
Mm.
But he used his first time offender status and was not required to submit DNA at the time.
Wow.
Of his conviction.
I didn't even know that was a thing. I thought, look, you did it, you get swabbed. I didn't know it was like, all right, it's your first offense. Like, we gonna chill.
Anybody under the age of 21 can use a youthful offender card.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. But it expires once you turn 22.
Yeah. Huh.
Because you're not youthful no more.
Yeah, you. Old Papa.
Yep. Old Papa. Yep.
Wow.
So because he applied for the first time offender status, he was not required to submit DNA.
Now, this was before he did.
This was before, yes. Huh. So he got put on parole and he then murdered Holly.
Mm.
Nobody knew that, but that's what happened.
Okay.
So he was put on probation in 2009, but he then violated those terms and was resentenced, which did require him to submit DNA, but nobody made him go do it. So he didn't comply.
And he probably already knew at that point, like, look, my DNA is all over this place. If they're not going to have me,
yep,
I'm not going to do it.
I'm not going to go do it.
Yeah, because that would have outed exactly him real quick.
Mm-hmm. So then he ran into more legal trouble in 2015 and was ordered several times to go submit DNA, but he never did it. And which is crazy to me because I'm like, why are we not knocking on his door with a Q-tip and a Ziploc bag?
Like, why are we like, sir, you confused. Need a, it's kind of like, let me tell you about your car's extended warranty, sir, sir,
yes,
sir.
Like, DNA, sir.
Like, you don't get an option. You are a criminal.
Like, I would volunteer as tribute. Here's my Q-tip. Here's my Ziploc bag. Swab, put it in the back.
Yeah, like, you are a criminal.
Yeah.
You don't get the option. Give me your DNA.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And this is kind of where people, like, hounded the police, right? They were like, well, once it came out that Michael was the person. And they're like, well, he did all this stuff. Like, how did y'all not know? Blah, 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 blah. He had... And Tony was like, you're right. Yes, he did. So there are issues in the judicial system. So let's fix them.
Yes.
But also, the police could have... They had no way of knowing any of that. If the DNA didn't match, it didn't match.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Michael Henslick was not on anybody's radar. He wasn't a murderer. He didn't have sexual assault charges. He literally was just a druggie. Like, he liked cocaine and marijuana.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like...
Dang.
However, I will say on the DNA front, the DNA database, since it was fully online in 1998, has collected more than 18 million people's profiles and has produced more than 500,000 hits in criminal cases.
Wow.
So, you know, it is doing something right.
Yeah.
However, this case in particular just had some missed opportunities, and it allowed Henslick to live under their nose for 9 years. And this is a really brave man because, like, I've been getting away with this for a really long time. I got to know my time's coming.
And you also need to think, like, I need to be on my P's and Q's.
Right.
Like, I need to make sure, like, I know my DNA is all over that crime scene. I know they have my DNA somewhere, so I should probably follow the rules.
Yeah. And, you know, he's clearly not that bright because why didn't he just move out of town? Because had you moved, you weren't even on the radar, first of all. Second of all, you could have avoided, like, you have petty charges. Like, you could have evaded police over marijuana charges for years.
Yeah.
Why didn't you just move?
Yeah.
Not glad he didn't. Now we have an arrest and a conviction.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, you had to have known you were going to get caught.
He probably didn't, honestly, because it doesn't sound like you said, it doesn't sound like he was very bright. So he probably like, well, I got to wait for this long. Like, they're not going to catch me now, you know? So
very true. Yeah. So let's get into the trial, the verdict, and the sentencing. Michael Henslick was convicted of the murder of Holly Cassano in her home back in 2009. And it is highly probable that he would spend the remainder of his life behind bars. And after Judge Heidi Ladd told the court, quote, the public deserves to be protected from the danger. That is exactly what she did. The judge ended up sentencing Michael Henslick to spend the rest of his, quote, natural life in prison. So on Friday, June 5th, 2022, marked a long-awaited day for the Cassano family, particularly Holly's mother, Toni. When the verdict was delivered, tears welled up in her eyes inside the courtroom. She expressed her ongoing struggle to come to terms with the outcome, but conveyed her gratitude to all of those that have kept Holly's memory alive throughout the years. In the days leading up to the verdict, the jury witnessed the grim scene within Holly's home of her blood-spattered walls. They viewed disturbing autopsy images of her body, as explained by forensic pathologist Scott Denton, who testified that she had suffered over 50 stab wounds that fatal day.
And just for
what? So he didn't just stab her once.
What for what?
50 times.
That makes no sense. For what?
And that's the ones he could count. He said there were some he couldn't count because he didn't really know.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm.
Yep. 50 stab wounds. That is overkill.
100%.
Yeah.
Like, why would you? And then I'm just going back to the story. Mm-hmm. You had consensual sex. You fell asleep mm-hmm. on her floor. You woke up and just stabbed her.
That's what he said.
Because you were either jealous or angry or in a fit of rage.
Mm-hmm.
For what? You literally awoke and chose violence, legitimately, according to your story.
Mm-hmm.
You were unhinged.
Yeah, that's his confession. Yeah, but of course he changes his story once he gets to court. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So here we go. Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Ritz inquired, quote, "Did it seem that Miss Cassino had put up a fight with her attacker?" To which Denton responded that she had essentially bled to death from sharp force wounds. They also sat and watched in horror the interrogation video in which Henslick admitted he had stabbed Holly and had sex with her lifeless body afterwards. So here's where, yep. So he said they had consensual sex, but then he admitted they did not, that he had sex with her after she had died.
What was the reason?
Can't give any.
I could never understand that.
Mm-hmm. But this is where the defense attorney goes on the defense. That's what they're paid to do. That's their job. They said that the confession was coerced, right? And they said it's because the interview lasted 5 hours, and only in those 5 hours did Michael finally admit to what he had done. But actually, the prosecution was like, hold up. No. Michael confessed within 1 hour of being in that interrogation room. Also, if you're into any type of true crime, a 5 hour interrogation is nothing.
It's not.
They literally will interrogate people for like 12 and 18
yeah,
hours.
Yeah, JonBenet Ramsey's mom was in there for like 6-7 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. So Henslick confessed within 1 hour, but the defense is like, well, it was 5 and it was coerced and it was due to a stressful manner. They put his back against a wall. That's what she said. They sat his back against a wall.
Okay.
And that was stressful.
How was that stressful?
Mm-hmm. So that's what they argued in court. That was one of their things. So the confession wasn't real, according to the defense.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. A forensic scientist from the crime lab also testified to the presence of Henslick's DNA on Holly's body and in her residence at the time of the murder. To establish this, investigators presented the cigarette butts that Henslick had discarded, that they had collected, to be able to compare the DNA samples. They ended up actually not getting like a cup or a can, but they found some cigarette butts that he threw out. And they utilized these to construct his DNA profile, which ultimately led to his downfall, which led us here.
Yeah.
They also found blood that belonged to Henslick and which he had left behind due to a cut he got during the stabbing. So not only did your semen match the DNA, but sir, your blood also matched the DNA.
But also, his confession was coerced.
Yeah.
The bread is in the pudding, and the pudding is the DNA.
Oh, no, but then here's the defense for that. Here's the defense for the DNA. Ready? They went back to the consensual sex story, but also they said that, Henslick was there. He found her bleeding to death, and he tried to save her. but he wasn't quick enough, and that he believes his brother actually murdered her.
How does that explain your blood being there? Your semen
that's
being
not
there?
How, that's not how genealogy, that's not how DNA works, sir. You and your brother do not have the same DNA.
You don't.
Mm-mm. Try again.
Nice.
I feel like they're just grabbing at straws at
But these
point.
Straws are dumb.
They are dumb.
These are stupid straws.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not how it works.
Also, if I'm Michael's brother and you just said that in court, I ain't your brother no more. Disowning you. No.
Not
absolutely not.
Not at all.
No.
Not at all. Brother who? Brother where? Not you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But let's not forget that outside of the DNA, which juries love DNA, Hinslick also confessed, which juries also love a confession. And in this confession, he said he stabbed Holly over 50 times. All right. So then we have the sheriff's office sergeant, Chris Darr. He sat alongside Hinslick during this chilling confession back like in 2018. And he reflected on the pressure that he felt of not wanting to disappoint the family of Holly. And he dedicated his team and investigated this case thoroughly. He gave a considerable amount of time towards this case and effort towards this case. And he received a lot of credit from Tony Cassino. Like, he's the one that kept Tony informed. He's the one that kept Tony in the loop. He, like, you know, they really, like, she was actually on a first name basis with Chris Darr, the investigator.
Okay.
So I was like, I liked that. I wanted to kind of give him, you know, his cake in this story.
Okay.
Yeah. Then the judge allowed the testimony of Doug Bloom in regards to a 2017 incident. Okay, so he was under the radar for 9 years. Yeah. Like you said, he should have been on his P's and Q's.
Sure, should have.
But he was not. So the judge allowed a testimony from an incident that happened in 2017 in which he responded to a call about a person on a roof attempting suicide. The home belonged to a woman who was 64 years old, and it was Hinslick who was on the roof. When they arrived, the woman was discovered and was suffering from a traumatic brain injury, which Hinslick had caused. During this incident, the officer called the Elderly Abuse Prevention Hotline. Hinslick claimed that the injuries the woman had sustained were not intentional. And that story never went any further. Like, I couldn't find anything else on that because then he was arrested a year later
mm-hmm.
for the murder of Holly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But they wanted to show the jury, like, he had a chance to be good. He's still not good.
And he's still causing bodily harm to people.
Right.
For no reason.
Also in 2017, the jury heard about how Hinslick was accused of punching his then girlfriend in the face. So she also had like filed like domestic charges or like a restraining order or something like of that effect. And all of this was obviously done in an attempt to show how dangerous Hinslick actually was.
Yeah, and unpredictable. Like, it's really just
very.
This is what I feel like it. Bow. This guy feel like, yep. Bah, like, sir.
And who knows, you might wake up in the middle of the night again and stab somebody.
Yeah.
So during closing arguments, court documents revealed Hinslick's defense sought to discredit the DNA evidence and raise doubts about the sheriff's office 9-year investigation. So basically they were like, you had 9 years to investigate this. Why are you just now finding my client? Blah, blah, blah. Did you do a shoddy work at police investigating?
Actually, no, I did a really good job. That's how we found him. Thanks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Mm. The defense also tried to say that some of the photos of Holly's body were inflammatory to the jury, which means it was irrelevant and unfairly harmful to the jury.
How was that irrelevant? That's the person.
Shouldn't they be seeing all the evidence?
The person that he murdered for absolutely no reason.
And the jury has the right to see all evidence photos.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all really just suck saying. At y'all job.
They really do. Mm-hmm. As any defense does, they attempt to poke holes in the prosecution case. However, the prosecutors and the jury ultimately rejected these arguments, saying that Hinslick had 9 years after the murder to get his life together, and he didn't.
Exactly.
His defense took one more shot when they decided to ask the jury to consider Henslick's young age at the time of Holly's murder. He was 21 years old.
You're now almost 30.
So you're old enough to buy alcohol. Yeah.
No, you're now 30 years old.
Like.
No.
Come on.
His young age. Now you've grown. If you had all this time to reflect, why didn't you go turn yourself in prior to them finding your DNA?
Mm-hmm. And they said that the jury should consider his young age because they, the defense, believed that Michael was rehabilitative potential.
No. What would make you say that? He's unprovokingly hurt three people.
He had 9 years to rehabilitate.
And he made two more offenses in that 9 years.
That we know about.
Exactly. You're not you're not. No.
Yeah.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
No, sir.
So the jury ended up reaching a guilty verdict after just 1 hour of deliberation.
Very nice.
Like they were in and out. As Toni, Holly's mother, exited the courtroom, she embraced the investigators and also hugged members of Henslick family who had been observing the trial throughout the week alongside her. Now, it was really... This is really not, it's not funny. It's not funny, but it's like, funny is not the word I was trying to say. I guess ironic or interesting. Like, so there's a photo of Toni, Holly's mother, hugging the investigative team.
Yeah.
And obviously the media is like taking pictures, right? Yeah. And in the background of that photo is Henslick's mother flipping off the media. But like Toni, even in court, like during the whole trial, there was at one moment Toni was seen like rubbing Henslick's mother's back, like trying to comfort her.
And then you're flipping them off?
But they were flipping off the media, not necessarily Toni, but like just the media.
But still, why are you what are you flipping? Your son did it.
Yeah.
He did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Flipping.
Maybe she was just angry. I don't know.
I mean, I get being angry, but don't be mad at the media because be mad at your son for putting y'all in this predicament.
Mm-hmm. Henslick was scheduled for an official sentencing in July, 1 month later after his trial. He faced a mandatory life sentence due to the jury's determination that he committed the crime in an exceptionally cruel manner. So they charged him with first degree murder. Okay. But if he was convicted of that, they could tack on what's called exceptionally cruel manner.
Okay.
They could tack that on. And that would mean that he could be sentenced, not to necessarily to death, but he could be sentenced to life with no possibility of parole. And he did not get to use the time he had already served as credit.
Good.
Okay. So when he was convicted of the first degree, they decided to tack on exceptionally cruel manner.
Yeah.
Well, his defense used a very insensitive sentence. And they said, no, that doesn't make any sense because Holly was already dead on some of those stab wounds, so she didn't feel anything. So it couldn't have been exceptionally cruel because she was already dead. I would have lost it.
She was already dead because of your client.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if she was dead or alive receiving those wounds. At the end of the day, he inflicted every single one. Mm-hmm. And that is exceptionally cruel.
I think anything past one is exceptionally cruel. I mean, I don't think you should be stabbing anybody anyways, but like, oh, boom, you stab somebody. But then you felt the need to go do it 49 more times?
And the fact that he was aware, like, yeah, I stabbed her about 50 times. Were you counting?
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Yeah. So clearly this obviously didn't work. This defense used this insensitive sentence and the jury was like, you can sit down now. We're done with you. Goodbye. Mm-hmm. So they did, in fact, actually go through with the exceptionally cruel manner.
Good.
And those charges were tacked on. Prosecutors indicated that they planned to present even more additional evidence during the sentencing hearing to solidify their case. Judge Ladd gave Hinslick a natural life sentence, meaning there will be no chance for parole or credit for time served. Good. Holly's mother said she believed this to be a just sentence and gave the following statement. I feel sorry for his family, but his family still gets the opportunity to talk to him and know where he's at. Hinslick does still have the option to appeal, as does anyone when they're faced with a prison sentence. However, he has not done so yet.
Does he know better?
So what came from all of this is the justice system realized how easy it is for some offenders to avoid giving their DNA, because that's exactly what happened to Michael Hinslick. This case could have been solved 9 years earlier had Michael just submitted his DNA when he was asked to do so. So with this knowledge, Champaign County requires anyone who is sentenced to probation to go straight to the office to submit their DNA. So basically, they can't just evade the police like Hinslick did for 9 years. And Holly's mother actually helped fight to put that into place.
Yes, girl. Mm-hmm. Yes, girl. Yeah. That's great.
And that is the case of Holly Casino.
Wow. Did the person who suggested this, did they like live there or did they like hear about it? Do you know like the backstory of how?
I'm not sure. I would have to go back to our messages, but if you did suggest this case, please message us as to why you suggested it. I know I wrote it down, but I didn't put who suggested it. I'm really sorry. I should get better about that. But if you were the one that suggested this case, like, can you give us some background information? Like I'd be interested.
Like, how did you know about it? Like, did you, are you from Casino? Not Casino, because that's the last name. Are you from Champaign?
Well, yes. Champaign's kind of like the bigger city, like on the outskirts of Mohammed, Illinois.
Are you from there? Do you know somebody? Did you like, I just want to know, because it seems like it's like a
tight-knit little.
Yeah. So I feel like unless you were there, you wouldn't really know about the case, you know? So I'm just curious, but thanks for suggesting it. I mean, glad that you finally got locked up for life.
I mean, granted, prosecutors don't have to, like, they never legally have to give a motive, but, like, it's just, like, why?
I think that's the real big question here. Like, your story made no sense.
None.
Then you rebutted, was like, actually, I got there and it was too late and my brother did it.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense. None of your stories are making sense. So none of them.
Yeah. Mm-mm. And like jealous over what? Y'all didn't even know each other.
I just don't understand that. And he's just like jealousy or a fit of rage or not.
Fear.
That makes no sense.
Zero sense.
None at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Yep. Well.
I was getting anxious towards the end. Yes. I started rubbing my nails. You saw, because they're for those who can see, they're like a reptile type snake skin.
Oh, they are.
Yeah, and it has.
I'm not going to show you mine because mine are so grown out.
And it has like a rough, like you can feel like the ridges. So like I'll notice myself at work when I'm getting a little too overwhelmed. I'll just be like rubbing them. Like I almost want them all the time because it's very refreshing. Like I'll make a nice nap.
Ooh, I hear that.
It's nice. I like them. I like them. She did them. With bubbles. Yeah, so she put like a green, like she painted them black, then she put like a green chrome on top, and then literally scooped like soapy water onto them and then cured them. And then when you wiped them away, they looked like this. So super cute. My friend Mia actually sent them to me the day I was supposed to get my nails done. And I said, immediately, I need them. These were not the nails I was supposed to get.
I like those.
Thank you.
Nice. Thank you.
Wow. Mm-mm. Shame on you.
Yeah. I agree.
Shame on you. And you deserve to give the family an answer as to why you took their baby away from them.
Mm-hmm.
Because that reasoning you gave was not even reasoning. It's dumb.
Mm-hmm.
It's very stupid.
And I wonder if he even has a reason though. Like, but admit that. Like, admit that, like, just like admit why, like even if there's not really a why, then just be like, I'm a psychopath, you know, like I don't something.
Yeah. Cause you go into our house, never met the girl, know her cousin.
Yeah.
cool with the cousin, flirted with the cousin, and you go into her house to talk about the cousin, end up having sex with her, and then stabbing her? That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense at all. No. But at least you're where you belong.
Yes, yeah. I agree. You're
where you belong. Mm-hmm. Well,
we're going to go to bed.
Yeah, double recording. We did it. We did it, Joe.
Yeah, we did.
It's 12.05 a.m., 11.05 for Brooke. Granted, this is the time that I'm usually awake. I'm a little tired. I'm not going to lie.
Brooke's never awake at this time, ever.
Yeah, I'm always awake. I come alive at night time.
I'm going to go crawl into my bed.
So, as always, the bell don't dismiss you.
We do.
So we will see you next time, y'all.
Bye.
Bye.